Even after disclosure of William Russell's vast Morton collection, astonishing revelations continued. In the late 1990s, a 58-page scrapbook surfaced that had been kept by Jelly. It contains invaluable materials, magazine clippings, letters and fan mail, contracts and publicity materials, mostly from the period 1935 to 38. But the scrapbook is accompanied by an equally large pile of loose documents from the years about 1920 to 1940, ranging from trivial to quite significant. This may have been Morton's sort of personal portable file cabinet and portfolio, or just pleasant reminders of his salad days. In any case, it was a significant find of Mortonalia. Glimpses like this add vivid life to a very complex man, reminding us there was more to Jelly Roll's personality than the boasting, petty criminal and pimp. He could be a gentleman in some situations. He was described by former acquaintances as generous. And though a boisterous raconteur, Jelly Roll seldom smoked or drank. He was a disciplined musician, punctual, practiced, thorough and well-rehearsed. He had a prodigious memory for people, places, and events, and he had a remarkably clear, theoretical grasp of jazz, far ahead of his time and unique for his day. The Pearls was written by Morton around 1920, in tribute to a, well, let's call her a waitress, at a bar he was working in Tijuana, Mexico. Intriguing and complex, it's one of his most difficult to perform tunes, partly because each section or theme sounds utterly unlike the others. It's a musical experiment and a metaphor. He's stringing together several unrelated themes of contrasting hues to fashion a necklace, which together forms the Pearls.
Thank you.
The Pearls, Jelly Roll Morton's Red Hot Peppers from 1927, and Chris Tile's fine Silverleaf Jazz Band in 1993. As fortune continued to frown on him, Morton moved to Washington, D.C. in 1935, following what he hoped was work as a fight promoter. By 1937, he was pianist, bartender, and bouncer at a dive in the city then called the dead end of the Schmaltz Circuit. Jelly Roll was apparently partner in a bar variously known as the Music Box, the Blue Moon Inn, or the Jungle Club. His duties included bartending, barrel opening, master of ceremonies, house pianist, and bouncer. One magazine writer described Jelly's situation there, quote, "He's playing as competently and expressively as anyone, his thumping heel beating out the slow rhythm, his eyes closed, his head thrown back, and the sad notes sprinkling from the keyboard into the low-ceilinged, smoky din. Frankly, there are not many that listen," end quote. One night, a bar fight broke out. Morton was badly hurt, stabbed in the head and chest. And as a result of the attack and subsequent poor medical care, his health began a sharp decline. He developed bad asthma, severe enough to hospitalize him for several weeks. And his heart, too, was beginning to fail. One friend described him as old, sick, and in financial trouble, more angry than despairing. Apparently, he was angry at the music business, unions, ASCAP, and the publishers, and angry that his heart was letting him down when he had so much to do. And we now know that he did have much to do, because among the more intriguing revelations of the Russell Collection are Morton's musical sketches conceiving new and even bolder music than what he'd previously attempted, and heading in exciting new directions. So in 1938, as a result of the Lomax recordings and publicity, a growing national search for musical roots, and the nascent New Orleans jazz revival, things began to finally look up again for Morton. He was resurrected from his premature grave at the Jungle Club bar. Despite all the frustration, adversity, and illness he'd faced, Morton rallied himself during 38 and 39 for a very public comeback. Though actually quite ill, he rose grandly to the opportunities presented, summoned the strength not only to record extensively for the Congressional Archive, but also commercially, even appearing on a national NBC radio broadcast. And in 1939, Jelly Roll was once again given the full resources and publicity of a high-profile RCA Victor session with top-notch sidemen, which included New Orleans Reed Masters Albert Nicholas and Sidney Bechet. The new works from the maestro were surprising.
Must go, sweet baby, leave a dime for Bill. All the rooster crowed and looked around. She said, if you want my fricassee, you got to round me down. Thank you. whining, boy. Don't deny my name, deny my name. I'm the whining boy, don't deny my name. Pick it up and take it like sweet staving chains. I'm the whining boy, and I don't deny my name.
Jelly Roll Morton singing his Whinin' Boy Blues and Don't You Leave Me Here. One of his signature tunes, he recorded Whinin' Boy several times, but that's the only one with a band, the Fine Band, assembled for his RCA Victor comeback session in late 1939. This is Jazz Rhythm. I'm Dave Radlauer. Now, aside from the high-profile Victor sessions, Morton actually made some other discs for small labels, which were either put out in very limited editions, or most remained long unissued. And among those mixed results were a handful of absolutely superb solo performances, including his magnificent Mamie's Blues. The first strain of Mamie's is a fragment that Morton heard as a youth, played all day long on piano by a next-door neighbor, blues singer Mamie Desdum. Mamie was missing two middle fingers on her right hand, and Jelly mimics her sound in the broken chord he plays with three fingers before moving on to other strains. Oddly, Morton is still somehow in Lomax debriefing mode, and he chats a bit. He injects New Orleans folklore, mentioning the can rusher, a kid who ran and got a bucket of beer for folks, usually prostitutes, and the 217 and 219 trains that were the daily east-west runs from New Orleans. Shortly afterwards, Satchmo Armstrong recorded it magnificently as the 219 Blues, but Morton's solo rendition is far more personal and intimate. Many consider Mamie's Blues his best single performance on disc.
This is the first blues I have no doubt heard in my life. Mamie Desdum, this was her favorite blues. She hardly could play anything else more, but she really could play this note. Of course, to get in on it, to try to learn it, I made myself the can rusher. 219 done took my baby away. Two seventeen, bring her back someday. 217 on the corner with her feet just soaking wet. Her feet was wet. 217 on the corner with her feet soaking wet. Begging each and every man that she met, if you can't give a dollar, give me a lousy dime. Can't give a dollar, give me a lousy dime. I want to feed that hungry man of mine. Mm-hmm.
Mamie's Blues. Morton's sad final chapter starts in 1940 or 41 with a trip or move to Los Angeles.
His stated motivations have to do with concern for the valuables, diamonds, of course, of a recently deceased relative, and he hopes the warmer, drier climate will ease his severe asthma. Covertly, the draw of the coast is a reunion with Mabel Bertrand, his former lover, companion, and business partner of nearly 20 years earlier, and I suspect his return to a region where the role had once been a major big shot, riding high on Easy Street.
But after a harrowing cross-country drive, things are no better for Morton. There are no opportunities in L.A., and his health continues downhill. A heart attack ends his life on July 10th, 1941. Nearest we can tell, he was age 54 or 55. Spanish Swat, one of Morton's deepest and I think most moving and dramatic piano pieces. Almost classical in conception and deeply Latin-influenced, Spanish Swat typifies an elusive but extraordinary artistic quality of Morton, his unique ability to blend opposites, complexity and simplicity, directness with sophistication, and delicacy with roughness. Downbeat Magazine, Los Angeles, August 1st, 1941. Bury Jelly Roll Morton on the coast. A solemn, high requiem mass and Roman Catholic ritual, followed by burial at Calvary Cemetery, was the world's parting gesture to Ferdinand Jelly Roll Morton, who died of heart trouble and asthma.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
Among those present at the funeral were pioneers of jazz music saying goodbye to one of their valiant little gang. Somebody mentioned it would have been a nice thing to have a street band there to march back from the cemetery, swinging hell out of Jelly's old songs the way they used to in New Orleans. The boys decided that was a swell idea, and they'd do it next time. You'll find some of the archival materials, texts, photos, audio, and other resources I've mentioned this hour online. And you can either use Google or start at my website, www.jazzhotbigstep.com. Jazz Rhythm is produced by Rhythm Productions, offering voiceover services and professional restoration of rare tapes and discs to digital. Next time, in the fourth and final program, I'll bring you more of the great music and tales that wouldn't fit in parts 1 through 3. It's pretty clear to me that early in his development, Morton freed the tuneful melodies of ragtime from their restricting rhythmic limitations, playing them instead as popular dance rhythms or blues. Into this adaptable vessel, he tossed whatever appealed to him as he roamed the American cultural landscape, borrowing from brass bands and marching music, Latin and Caribbean rhythms, French opera, vaudeville, honky-tonk piano, Afro-American rhythms, and the blues. And that is how Jelly Roll Morton became the bridge, the missing link, between the ragtime music that preceded him and the classic jazz that followed. From decades of research and Morton studies is emerging a more accurate and nuanced picture, essentially validating his recollections and claims. Though hugely inflating his own unique importance, Jelly Roll clearly had a monumental role among the cadre of pioneers who collectively first invented and shaped jazz music early in the 20th century. A growing consensus acknowledges Morton's monumental contribution to the development of jazz and jazz piano. And there's a steadily rising estimation of his brilliance as a composer, recording artist, and musical visionary. And quite frankly, telling you his story is about as much fun as I can have in front of a microphone. That's Jazz Rhythm and the saga of Jelly Roll Morton. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for listening. New Orleans Blues.
Everybody knows him.
to adore it when you see him strolling. Everybody opens up his red hot stuff. A place you can't get enough, play it soft. Don't abuse, play them jelly roll blues.
You see, that's my foot thing here, see. Everybody in the world that ever heard me remember the foot, see. That's how it started getting the four beats, so. Jelly Roll Blues, the song, see?
That was where they start getting the four beat?
Right from the foot. The way I used to pat my foot, you know. That's how it started. Of course, the Pearls brought it out later, yeah. Yes, sir. Nobody did that for years but me. That's how the four beats came. They used to beat what you call two beats to measure.
Ladies fancy, everybody knows him, certainly